Welcome to Films Apart, the podcast where we poke fun at buried flops, unearth hidden gems, and explore timeless classics.
So grab yourself some popcorn, sit back, and let's break these films apart.
Hello, today's episode is a raise ahead in light of David Lynch's passing, RIP.
Yeah, I was quite shocked.
I think it's always odd when one of them sort of big names passes.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that he was like one of my favourite directors of all time, but he was such a famous director and such a famous figure, really.
Yeah, I think it's sad that the industry's lost such an auteur, and like you say, he's obviously influenced a lot of people. He's a figurehead of the industry.
Yeah. So because of that, we were going to watch Once Upon a Time in America.
Yes.
And we've delayed that a week to watch Eraserhead, which neither of us had ever watched.
No, I've seen Lynch's other work, but I'd never seen Eraserhead.
I don't think I'd seen it, but there's a little bit in my head that I think maybe I watched it once when I was drunk.
Yeah, it could be mistaken for
it. It just looks it's very familiar because obviously it is quite a familiar, and the image is very familiar, isn't it?
That
picture of his head.
Of his eraser head.
Yeah. With a very David Lynch haircut.
Yeah. I liked his hair.
Yeah. So what did you think?
I enjoyed it. I tried making sense of it, as you always do with his pieces. I don't think I did, but I think it was a very interesting film, experimental.
I think it would be very hard to watch this film once and make complete sense of it.
Yeah.
So if anybody's tuned in to listen to this because they're massive Lynch fans, you might be slightly disappointed.
We'd honor have him rolling in his grave at our just complete misunderstanding of this film. But that's what the point of art is. I think that's where a lot of the joys from his films come from, just having your own interpretations of them. And interestingly, I read as well, he's never heard of anyone interpreting the film in the way that he does.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
Maybe that'll happen today.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
But you won't know about it.
No, you won't know about it. But I think that's another thing that's interesting about Lynch is that he's almost like a magician, where he never quite reveals his tricks. He'll never speak on what the meaning of these things are. And it's just that sort of mystery aspect where now we know that we're never going to get the answers for the meanings behind these films from the man himself.
He's a bit of a mysterious figure, isn't he? He always sounds a little bit like slightly stoned, I think.
Bit coked up.
Well, no, he doesn't sound coked up. He sounds kind of, you know, in the clouds a little bit. He's an artist. He's clearly an artist. That's very, very evident. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would say that is one of the things about the film that really stood out for me. There was loads of moments in it where you would have like the camera showing just almost stills of people.
Like a portrait.
Like a portrait, yeah. Mm. It made me think of, do you know that painting American Gothic by Grant Wood?
I don't, but I'll look it up now.
You look it up, you'll probably recognise it. It's quite a famous painting with a man with a pitchfork and his wife.
Yes, I do know this.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they had that kind of benign look on their faces.
They've got very long necks in this picture.
And that's not something that stood out for me in this film. Well, actually, I say that, that's a load of nonsense, because at the end, he had a very long neck.
Yeah, the baby had a
huge neck.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big neck.
Should we try and synopsis this? I don't know how we're going to do this.
So it follows the adventure into parenthood of a man vacationing from his printing job. But it's sort of thrown on its head and very absurd. Yeah.
Is that it?
That's basically it. It's his deformed child.
Yeah.
It's a man looking after his alien baby.
The way they describe it in the film is the mother-in-law describes it as a premature baby.
Particularly premature.
But to me, it made me think it was like a parasite, and it made me think that is a little bit what a baby is, a parasite.
Maybe it's a commentary on out-of-wedlock children, because it's premature, she calls it. Obviously, they say that they must get married after this, and then
she doesn't look happy about it.
She's not happy about it. It's very shameful, and it's deformed. It's a monster.
Yeah. So let's go through it bit by bit from the beginning. So you've got the first 11 minutes, I had a look.
Okay.
Where there isn't any dialogue.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a silent film.
It felt like a silent film. Reminded me a little bit of Once Upon a Time in the West for that. Mm. There wasn't a lot of dialogue, but there was a lot of sounds, like Once Upon a Time in the West. Mm. But it was machinery sounds and the clunking of...
Yeah, very industrial.
Yeah, an industrial kind of landscape, industrial sounds. Mm. There was like a man at the beginning of the film who was pulling levers.
Yes, and he returns later on as well.
Yeah.
I thought that, is he meant to be like working the guy's brain away? Well,
he was, whatever he was doing was changing something about the man, is what I kind of took it to be. Yeah, maybe that was in his brain. Mm. Maybe that was him churning out babies. Because of that, I started to think of this industrial landscape as, this is what life is, you know, we churn out babies, you know, we churn out life.
Yeah.
It's just this constant kind of machinery of us that is making something, you know, we're printers.
Yeah.
He was a printer. It made me think about 3D printing as well. Which
3D printed a baby?
Yeah, which is, you know, obviously wasn't a thing then, but printing, you know, I mean, he was a printer. I presume that was some sort of comment.
Yeah, especially with the pencil makers, how they use, obviously, brains for the erasers. And scalp. Yeah, they industrialise life.
Exactly, yeah. There's so many things in it, wasn't there, that took you down little avenues in your head.
Mm.
It felt like a dream, a lot of it, like he was in a dream state.
Yes.
To begin with, it all felt dreamlike. And then as he was walking home with his groceries at the beginning, then you start to get a bit of reality. You have groceries, which suggests normality.
Yeah.
He goes to his home, which suggests normality. You see a record player.
Mm-hmm.
He sees his neighbour
just
before that, which was an interesting encounter. That was the first bit of dialogue.
Yeah.
Where she's talking to him and he's looking a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think that's something that David Lynch captures in a lot of the films of his that I've seen. I've only seen Elephant Man, Blue Velvet and this. But it feels in this film particularly, every interaction with a woman is really encapsulates that, like, moment where you say something stupid and then that complete and utter dread after it, where you can feel yourself going red and just that feeling where you're like, why have I said that? I feel like this whole film captures that feeling perfectly of just after something that you've said stupid in front of a woman, it's like, I'm fucked, that's my life over.
You see, but that never entered my head. So okay. That says something about you.
Yes, that's something that I've been through
but
a lot.
That's what I think this film does, like art,
is
we put our own interpretations on things. Like there was the moment when, after that, the neighbour says that Mary is called and she wants to see you. And Mary turns out to be his partner who he's had some sort of a sexual relationship with.
Dirty.
Then we go to Mary's house and there's this really awkward conversation. And it's kind of muted as well, isn't it? Which was interesting. It's like the dialogue doesn't matter as much as the sounds in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the dialogue was empty and that's the feeling in that household. And then you've got the mom sitting there. And that's when it's quite funny. And she's going, what do you do? I'm on vacation. No, what did you do before your vacation? I was a printer at work to wherever it was.
Yeah.
Lapels, I think. And she goes, he's a very good printer. And
he's very smart. He's very smart at printing.
It. And she goes, I can tell he's very smart. And it's just like really just empty, like funny commentary. And then the man comes in. It's like this really funny scene with this guy who comes in and he starts talking about, I remember when this just used to be pastures. And people think that the pipes grew in these houses, but I plumbed the whole of this town. And that's how much of that can you relate to in life, you know?
Yeah.
That's so...
It feels like bringing, like, a girl home for the first time to your parents when you're at, like, primary school or something, and that awkward thing of them trying to talk to you and just you're from completely different worlds. There's no real crossover.
See, to me, it felt like the conversation that happens in so much of life that we've talked about this before that is just pointless.
Yeah.
Why are we having this conversation? Yeah. It's like he's commenting on the emptiness of it all.
It doesn't matter.
And that man saying all the stuff that we've heard a million times before. I remember when this used to be fields, you know? Like, I've heard that since I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's just like stuff people say. And then you get to the meal. This was my long way of getting to the point that what you related to in this film, I related to this bit strangely in this film with the chicken. When he goes, I can't do anything, my hand's numb.
Yeah.
Will you carve?
Yeah.
And it felt like it was passing the mantle a little bit.
Yeah.
And I have been in that situation, and there's a lot of pressure to carve well.
It's like, prove your manhood yeah, to me and you can have my daughter. That's what that scene feels like.
And that was the bit that stuck with me, that made me think I really related to that. It was really big in my head anyway. Yeah. I think that there's like moments like that in the film.
I think that whole scene of the dinner, I think that was the most memorable scene that stuck with me the most after the film.
Well, it's the scene that was most grounded in reality, I guess.
Yeah, and I think I like them aspects of these films that are grounded in reality, but things just aren't quite right.
Yeah, it's kind of surreal. Yeah. Without that, have you ever heard of a film, I don't know if you studied this, called Un Chien Andalou? It's like a really old film made by Buñuel, I think you pronounce his name, Luis Buñuel, and Dali, okay. Salvador Dali, directed it. And there's like lots of black and white images, and you see like an eye being cut open and ants coming out. It's just all these weird kind of images. It made me think of that film, and I think without that kind of grounding in reality, and there's a bit of that in that film, Dali, that's what Dali is, surreal. Mm-hmm. But this was more grounded in reality. There was more that you could latch on into this than there was in that film.
So after the meal is cut short, the mum drags Henry aside to demand him to tell her has he had sexual intercourse with her daughter.
And then snogs him.
Yeah, and then after he admits it, she snogs him. And also there's another weird bit where the women just start climaxing.
No, it's before he admits it.
Yeah.
Before he admits it, it's like she's trying to get it out of him, and then she snogs him. And he goes, I'm too nervous. Yeah. I'm too nervous. Yeah. And he looks away. This is the stuff I guess that you were talking about, but...
And then there's another bit before and then during the meal where his partner is just sat on the sofa. They're having a conversation and she just starts making these odd climax sounds.
Oh, when they're at the meal? Yeah. When they're at the meal.
This is before the meal.
The partner makes climax sounds,
gets her hair brushed. That stops it. And then the mum does it at the dinner table as well.
When the partner did it, I thought she was having a seizure. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry. And he was apologising about triggering this seizure. And then when he was cutting the chicken, then the mum starts orgasming. Yeah. Which, to me, I linked to, because it was like he was taking over the mantle. He was becoming the man of the house. It's like she was becoming turned on by him.
Yeah.
And then in the next bit, she's snogging him. And then the daughter comes out and bursts out crying, which at first I thought was... because she was annoyed at him, but then it didn't seem like she wanted to marry him. So I think she was just crying because she was being forced to marry somebody because they were having a baby.
And she's had this premature child that's like a little baby alien.
Yeah. So then they agree to get married. They go back home with the baby. And then you've got this scene that I guess if you've got kids, and neither of us have, if you've got kids, you could really relate to.
Yeah.
I mean, you can relate to it, obviously, anyway, but just the crying of this being.
This abomination.
And
there's all parents going
through. And the woman getting incredibly fraught in some sort of postnatal depression around it until she leaves him.
Yeah. I think this whole film was likely an exploration of fatherhood rather than parenthood, and being left as a father to figure things out on your own, because of obviously the mother has sort of maternal instincts, fathers have to sort of learn them, it's not entirely biological. I think it's an exploration of that, and this father having to find comfort in his child because of it is this alien, it's this thing that he doesn't understand. I think there's probably a commentary on sort of fatherhood,
but he, unlike her, seems to quite like the baby.
Yeah.
To begin with, at least. Yeah. And then the baby gets sick. Mm. That reminded me of The Kid, which is a Charlie Chaplin film. He finds this baby on the street and he ends up having to look after this kid and bring this kid up.
Mm.
And he's just on his own, this single kind of father, and the kid gets ill, and it kind of reminded me of that. It reminded me of so many things. That's the thing about it. It made me think of so many works of art in one way or another, whether it was, you know, film or art or whatever. You could see that there's probably influences in that. So then there's the lady in the radiator.
Yeah, the chipmunk lady. She's got big cheeks.
With big cheeks, yeah. What's she? Who's she? What does she mean in all of this?
I don't know. Yeah, I was lost at that bit. I don't know what she is. Is that his ideal woman?
I read like a minute before we started this, I had a quick Google, and I read somebody said that she might be his baby in the future with naive feelings of love towards her father. But, you know, I mean, definitely didn't cross my mind.
She weren't as alien-looking.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I don't really know what...
And there's that song she sings about being in heaven. So that felt very dreamlike.
I think a lot of them bits were dream sequences, because obviously then he gets his head cut off within that world and it gets turned into an eraser.
Yeah.
On the end of a pencil. And then he wakes up.
Well, that wasn't real. Spine.
No, it wasn't real. Yeah.
The other notable thing in it was the affair.
Yes.
With the neighbour.
Yes.
So, you know, clearly he was attracted to her from the off.
Yeah. I find that he's sort of, he doesn't want to initially, does he? It's sort of initiated by her and then he gives in to his instincts.
Or he's scared to.
Yeah.
Because
he
then
knows it's wrong.
When he's in the room, the baby's crying and he starts trying to hold the baby's mouth to stop it from crying, which I thought he was going to kill the baby. I thought that's what's going to happen here. This baby's going to die because he's going to get it on.
Yeah.
Well, that did in the end.
Yeah. But it wasn't for that reason.
It wasn't. Well, I think it was for that reason.
Do you?
Well,
I think it was because he was on.
Well, because then. So he has this affair with the woman. Well, he has a night of passion with a woman in a bed that turns into a bath of steam.
Mm.
Which was weird.
Was it? Oh, I found that.
That was the most normal bit about it. And then at the end, he comes back and he sees the neighbour with some man.
Mm.
And they're almost
jealous.
Mocking him,
yeah.
Really. The guy's looking at him with his big smile on his face. And he gets very jealous and then he goes in and then he opens up the baby's swaddling.
Yeah.
And inside is just the baby's organs.
Yeah, that's part of the baby, the bandaging.
Or he's keeping his organs her organs together. And then he pierces the organs with scissors, is it, I think? Oh, yeah, the scissors. And then kills it.
Yeah. I didn't see that as he does it out of spite. I took that as he thought, oh, let's get these clothes off of it. And then he's like, oh, fucking hell. And then he didn't know what to do. I don't know why he stabbed it, though.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
It's like a blister, it looked like, maybe.
But he was really moved and affected by the fact that the neighbour was... He came in really stressed about it. And then he cut the baby open.
Yeah.
And killed it.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how that could be... Well, I mean, presumably that's a logical explanation and no one's got the explanation that he intended. But that's a wonderful thing, isn't it? It's like...
What, killing your baby?
No, that he said, so far, nobody has explained what I intended.
Yeah.
Now, that might not be true.
Yeah.
But even if it isn't true, it's a great thing to say because it's a comment about art, isn't it? And that it is what it is to you.
I think as well, the way that I read it, the way he had worded it was that he wasn't saying, oh, everyone's getting it wrong. It was, no one has interpreted it as I have, almost like he understands this art isn't what he intended it to be. It's his own thing, and he can interpret it in his own way as the artist, but the audience can interpret it however they want to.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is about the difficulties of parenthood, like with fractured relationships, obviously arguments, the threats of being unfaithful, sickness in the child, very stressful point because they're so delicate. The in-laws, the sort of cop-outs of responsibility by the mother, of I'm saying I'm going to my parents, and that sort of break of mutual respect and dependence on each other falling away because there's this newborn child getting in the way of the relationship now.
Well, I think the relationship didn't seem to be anything anyway, did it? Because he came round and he said...
I've
not seen you. Why is this not? So it felt like that relationship was already dead, and that relationship was only alive because of this creature, the baby.
Yeah,
it was never meant to be.
No,
and his carnal desires lay more with the neighbour than it did with her.
Yeah, and then another difficulty of parenthood is a woman in your radiator dancing on placentas.
Always gets in the way.
It's hard. And sleep deprivation as well.
Sleep deprivation, women in the radiators, women that sing in the radiators, and chipmunk women.
Yeah, chipmunk women. It's hard. It's a difficult you have to go for as during parenthood.
Life is very hard. You know, every now and again, when that is a part of your life, what you need is a bed that converts into a bath of steam that you can have sex with the neighbour.
Yeah. And just cut your baby open.
And if things get too hard, kill the baby.
Kill the baby. Get me alive. Yeah. I think a lot of it is meant to be... Obviously, there are some that are very obviously dream sequences, but I think a lot of it is based around that sort of sleep deprivation and the sort of parental insanity that you go through during the early weeks or months of parenthood, things just not really making sense and being a completely foreign world. And that sort of isolation from the rest of the world, because all you have time for is yourself, your partner and the baby.
It made me a little bit glad I don't have a baby.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
I don't really think there's a lot more we can say, is there? What I found overall was that for a film that you spend a lot of time in your head with, it was actually quite beautiful in a way, like to watch. I didn't feel bored.
No.
I thought the shots were really nice.
Yeah.
I thought the sound design, the, you know, everything about the film was so nicely done.
Mm-hmm. Although there wasn't really much dialogue, it wasn't a quiet film. There was always something happening with the sound design.
God, no, it was noisy as hell. Yeah, in the beginning, that white noise was sanity, almost. So what would you give it then? Let's popcorn score it.
I think this is the hardest one yet to score, because it's sort of like the previous films, I've scored them for their entertainment value. Rather than with this, I don't know what score would do it justice. I'm not going to score it a 4 or a 5, because I don't think it's an amazing film. I think it's a good film that gets you thinking. It's a piece of art. It's almost separate from being a part of cinema, in my eyes.
Yeah, it is difficult, but then we've only got 5 to score it out of, so that makes it a little bit easier.
Mm.
It was interesting listening to what you said. It made me reflect a little bit.
Mm.
I wouldn't give it 5 is where I'm at the moment.
Yeah,
it is difficult, actually.
Because I think so much of this film is what you make of it and the time you spend with it after having watched it.
Maybe I'm too generous. My salty popcorn score would be 4.
4.
And this is coming from somebody who is not a massive Lynch fan.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it in the same way that some people get it. I've tried to watch Twin Peaks, and it's not really been something that's appealed to me. And I watched Mulholland Drive not that long ago when it came out of the cinema again, and it annoyed me.
Annoyed you?
Because I was expecting it to be much better.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I want to go back and watch it after watching this, because I feel like I've got more of an insight into the David Lynch that made those films, as opposed to Blue Velvet and Elephant Man, which are much more logical films.
Yeah, I think that's the thing.
So the fact that it made me want to watch his films again,
and watch the rest of his films,
and the fact that it was beautiful,
is
the reason that I would give it 4. That it just looked really nice, and it felt very consistent, and I didn't once feel like this person didn't know what he was doing.
No.
I did feel like that when I watched Mulholland Drive. I felt like he didn't know what he was doing at times.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like that once during this film. I felt like he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah. I guess I'm just concerned about, depending on the score, that's going to reflect of what I think is the piece. But I'm thinking of giving it, I'm struggling to decide between 3 out of 5 and 4 out of 5. But mainly because of the films I've scored previously. If I give it a 4, I don't know if it's a better film than some of them. Shit. I'm going to say 3 out of 5. I think it's a brilliant film. It gives you a lot to think about.
So that's 7.
Has a lot to say.
So you gave it 3 sweet. I gave it 4 salt. That's 7 sweet and salty popcorn, which puts it on a par with Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right.
Cool.
7 out of 10. Yeah.
Like always, like we say, you know, if you disagree with us, if you think
Tell
we're
us.
Complete idiots, if everything we've said just makes us sound like the most...
Please give us hate in the comments.
Ridiculous
because
people.
Yeah. Please give us hate.
Yeah, we want hate.
Despise us. Come on. No, I'm not marking it low just to get a reaction. I think it's, for me, a 3 out of 5. But as well, this
low.
Is... No,
I don't think
no,
that's low.
No. I think... For me as well, where I come into film, I think this reflects in my scores of previous films. I like mainstream movements, blockbusters, the big greats like Indiana Jones, Star Wars. Like, for me, film is very much a medium for storytelling, and a part of that medium that I struggle with is the more artistic side of other movements which aren't more mainstream. And I think that's just because I've not explored them much, and this podcast gives me a chance to. Which is probably why I find it easier. Not that this was a hard watch, but I would score his other films, maybe like The Elephant Man or Blue Velvet, a higher, because they're more narrative. I feel like I watch films for narrative.
From off the top of my head, I would probably give Elephant Man 5.
Yeah.
But it's been years since I've watched it, so it might be different. I remember being amazed by
it. Yeah, it's a moving film. I've not seen it since I was like 12, 13, so I'd have to give it a rewatch.
I was probably in my 20s, I reckon.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
I hope we've done David Lynch justice. I probably haven't with my score, but that's not to say that he's not an amazing artist.
No. And if he would want you to do anything, it would be to meditate.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Go away, watch these films, think on them.
And meditate. And,
yeah, meditate.
Peace.
Kill your babies.
You can't say that after I said peace.
If you want peace, it comes with quiet, and to do that you need to kill your babies.
Peace.
Peace.